Welcome to the I Am African podcast, where excellence isn't just inspired, but demanded. I believe in asking the difficult questions, starting the uncomfortable conversations, proposing outside-the-box solutions, and of course, shaking tables. No, breaking tables, all while being African. I am your host, Vera Ezimora. Hey, we are back. So how's everyone doing in light of all this coronavirus social distancing? On my end, I'm still working from home by force, by fire by force. We're still working from home this week. We were given 2 weeks, which was last week and this week. I don't know what happens after this. I suspect they will extend it, but I don't know. But the most important thing is that I am safe, I am healthy, Davirastic is doing great, my family is great, we're all fine. It's unfortunate what's going on around the world. I'm really hoping that we've already seen the worst of the virus, and my heart goes out to everyone who has caught the virus, especially those who have lost their lives over this. I'm really hoping we're closer to the end. Alright, so you know what I did right before I started recording this podcast? You don't know, but I'll tell you what I did. I ate some pounded yam and onugbu soup, or bitter leaf soup for those who are not Igbo. My grandma cooked it, and you guys, you know that bitter leaf soup is not the same, or as Igbo people say, odinodinodi, they are different kind, there are levels to this thing. My grandma's bitter leaf soup is nothing like my bitter leaf soup, so mama cooked some, and I ate it before I started recording this podcast, because I was so hungry, and I was like, I don't want to be recording this, and all I'm thinking about is food. So by the end of this quarantine, I hope my clothes still fit. Honestly, I've not been eating too much more than usual, or even more than usual. But yes, that onugbu soup, that hit the spot. I mean, it had goat meat, stockfish, dry fish, tripe, cow. Ah, God, should I go on? Let me not torture you too much. Of course, I have to update you on some things that I mentioned last week. Like, my difficulty in finding guests, I am happy to report that that is no longer the case. I am happy to tell you that as of today, I have booked a number of guests. If you're subscribed to my emails, then you'd know exactly what number. And if you're not subscribed, by the way, then join us. I call these subscribers, they're my sweet potatoes, yes, but they are the insiders. Because whenever I have news to share, whatever it is, I send it via email first before I put it out in any other platform. So if you're not subscribed, the link is in the show description of this episode. It's the one that says monthly love notes, and I send these emails once or twice a month, at most three times, and that's even a stretch, but usually twice. So if you haven't, please join us. It's really easy, and of course it's free. Last week, I gave a shout out to listeners in two cities. So today, I have two new cities to give a shout out to. I have Islington, and I'm hoping I'm saying it correctly. Islington, England. If not, please correct me. And Kachia, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but Kachia in the state of Kaduna in Nigeria, which I'm surprised by because it comes up as one of my top cities. But whoever these people are, thank you so much for listening to the I Am African podcast. Please, everyone, don't forget to share, to subscribe, and to review, especially on Apple. And I think Spotify does it too, but Apple for sure. Please don't forget to review. So appreciated. Thank you for those who have rated it, but don't forget to write a review. Thank you. Now, what I want to talk about today is how my intuition saved my life. This is not clickbait. I didn't title it this way so you can be curious and I wouldn't have anything to actually tell you. No. This is a real story. So I used to pray a lot to hear the voice of God, right? I would pray, not just, and my thing was I wanted to hear him audibly. Like I wanted, the way I sit and talk to any other human being, that's what I was praying for, to hear God's voice very audibly. Vera, my child, here's what you should do. That's how I imagined it. And I remember sometimes I'd be driving in my car and I would randomly look over at the empty passenger seat next to me. And in my mind, I would try to imagine, is the Holy Spirit sitting down right here, right now? Well, he should say something, or she should say something. And I would listen intensively and nothing. I never heard anything. But it was always a prayer that God would speak to me, that I would hear him audibly and loudly and clearly what he's telling me to do, how he's telling me to do it, when he wants me to do it. That was the prayer. But in 2017, my marriage ended. Let me give a little bit of a background here. So I am Igbo. I used to be married to a Yoruba guy. We've got one kid together. She's 4. I have written my marriage story on the blog. And if you have no idea what on earth I'm talking about, there is a link to it in the show description for this episode. So you can just click it and see it for yourself. So that being said, my marriage ended in 2017. But prior to that, like in the summer and the fall, things were way more different than they had been before. They were just taking a nosedive faster and deeper. And I remember I wasn't sleeping at night. I was really restless and I just couldn't sleep. I'm tossing and turning. And I told this to my ex-husband that I didn't feel at peace. But he said, oh, you're just overreacting, you worry too much and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, maybe I am worried too much. But I just know I felt like there was impending doom. And maybe that sounds crazy, but that's how I felt. My ex-husband traveled to Nigeria in November of 2017. And before he traveled, this restlessness was getting stronger and stronger. And more and more, I felt like something isn't right. I don't know what it is, but it felt like something bad was going to happen. So I started praying a lot. I was praying Psalm 35. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but you can check it out. You can Google it if you don't have a Bible or the Bible app. You can Google it, but it's basically a psalm that you pray against your enemies. And I did not know what enemies I was praying against, or if I even had enemies. I certainly couldn't think of one, but I prayed that psalm every day, morning and night. I prayed that psalm. The psalm basically says that, I'm praying for whatever pit my enemies dug for me, that they fall in it, whatever trap they set for me, that they get caught by it, that they get chased down by an angel in the night on the slippery road, you know, like all this kind of stuff, which you would ideally be like, yes, I'm praying for that, for my enemy. Did we die? But I didn't know who I was praying against. I just kept praying that prayer. However, here's what happened. A bunch of weird things really started happening in terms of my intuition. And I'll start from here. I love reading books. A lot of times I pre-order books on Amazon. Even if I don't know the author, if I just come across it and it seems like something I would like, I order it. So that was what happened for that book, Children of Blood and Bone by Tomi Adeyemi. I don't know if you've read it. You've probably heard about it. It did really good. Okay. So as I saw it in 2017 on Amazon, available for pre-order. I didn't know who Tomi was. I just saw the name of the book because it also called it Children of Orisha. So that told me it was of a Nigerian background, right? So I immediately felt drawn to it. I was like, oh, okay, a Nigerian girl. All right, girl, let's go. So I wanted to pre-order the book. I was ready to pre-order it, but I didn't. Why? Because the book was going to be out in March of the following year, March of 2018. And so I didn't order the book. And my reason, honest to God, my reason was, by the time this book comes out, I might not even be living here anymore. Like, I might not be in this marriage anymore. And that was such an odd thought, because at this time, my ex-husband and I had not separated. The marriage wasn't great, but I didn't have any real concrete tangible reason to say that in March I would not be here. It was just a thought that crept into me, and I believed it and I held onto it, and I didn't understand where it was coming from or why I felt that way. Like, girl, what you talking about, girl? You're not gonna get divorced, you're not gonna leave your marriage. But still, I did not order the book. That it came out in March. And do you know that in March of that year, of the following year, of 2018, was when I actually moved out. The marriage was over in December, so he had to leave because I had the protective order against him. But the point is, come March, I was actually out. And I didn't even remember until I went back to order the book, and I thought, wow, that was crazy. Like, how did you ever guess that you would not be here in March? I don't know, but it worked out. And I ended up ordering the book in April of 2018 from my new residence. Another thing that happened that was weird was that I started, you know, when you order things online and they get delivered in boxes, I started keeping the boxes. And this was happening in 2017 before we actually separated. I started keeping the boxes, and my reasoning was that, I'm going to need to move out of here and I'm going to need boxes, so let me start keeping them. But it was that kind of thought that I didn't even understand. Again, why do you think that you're going to move out of here? Why do you think you need this moving box? In fact, sometimes I thought to myself that I was professing, even though I wasn't saying it audibly, that my mind was professing evil things, because you know how they say there's power in the tongue. So technically, my tongue wasn't saying it, but my mind was conceiving it. And I'm thinking of that Bible verse that says, as a man thinketh, so is he. So I'm afraid and I'm thinking, why are you thinking this way? And I would try to rebuke that spirit that was thinking, I would need this moving boxes. Why do I need moving boxes? I'm married. I'm not going anywhere. We're going to work on this. We're going to make it work out. But I started keeping the boxes. And do you know, when I moved out, I used every single one of those boxes. Every one. Another thing I did, we were living in a 3-bedroom apartment. One bedroom was for our daughter, Ada Verastik. And Ada Verastik's bedroom was the biggest one. And I wanted to buy some furniture, like a chest where I could put more clothes, because she had a walk-in closet, but she didn't have, apart from her crib, she didn't have any other furniture in the room. So I wanted to buy a chest, you know, make it more girly, arrange it, buy her a little desk. I didn't buy any of that. Why? Because I thought, I'm going to need to move out. And this is going to be one more thing I have to take with me. So I shouldn't be investing in furniture right now. Also, you shouldn't be spending a lot of money right now, because you're going to need money to move. And once again, I try to rebuke that thought, because, girl, why are you thinking that you're going to leave? You're not going. But I ended up leaving, as of course you know. And I didn't have that chest or any extra furniture because, you know, I didn't invest in one. One other thing, now this part is creepy. So at some point, as the marriage continued to deteriorate, I mentioned, he's Yoruba and I'm Igbo, and his mother lived with us, and even the relationship between she and I was different. It wasn't hostile, but it was different. There was a different vibe, there was a different energy. So I suspected that, oh, maybe these people are always talking, you know, they're speaking in Yoruba. I don't speak Yoruba. So although this person I was married to was a kind of person who had sworn that, you know, to always protect his family and his wife and all that kind of stuff, but I had a deep feeling that these people are talking about me. I needed to find out what they were saying, if they were saying something. So I started secretly recording their conversations, right? And of course, they spoke freely because they didn't think I was doing that. And I would send the recordings off to my Yoruba friends who told me things that chilled my bone. In one recording, they're talking about me. The mother tells him that she, you know, my wings have grown too big for them and they need to clip them. Can you imagine what that felt like, being a wife, listening to your husband discussing you and saying that he needed to clip your wings? Think about that. Let that sink in for a second. That's just one of the recordings. In another recording, they are talking about, I needed to move out of the house. And he tells her that if she doesn't move, I'll pack her things up and I'll throw her out. And she's telling him in Yoruba, Beni, yes, which means yes, that's what we need to do. We need to kick her out. I don't know if the plan was to kick me out with my child or without my child, but it wouldn't even have been possible legally. He knew that. She didn't, but he knew that. So I don't know if he was just pandering to her or if he was just making himself feel better. I don't know. But, you know, this boy had not even been brave enough to confront me and say, hey, maybe I don't want this marriage anymore, or maybe we should go. No, nothing. He's just discussing me. So of course I sent it off to my Yoruba friends, who gave me, even they were afraid to tell me what it said, because they were just like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. And they told me, I'm like, cool. And I know you must be wondering at this junction, well, what did I do? I did nothing. This was happening after he came back from Nigeria. He came back in November, and the next month, within a month, literally, he came back, I think, on the 19th of November, and our marriage was officially separated on December 19th or 20th, one of them. So the point I'm trying to make is, I did the recordings. By this time now, after hearing the first recording, I already know, okay, this is over. What do I do next? How do I do it? I'm not an impulsive person, so I wasn't going to just jump up one day and be like, you know what, that's it, we're done, get out. No, I needed to strategize. And I know that in my first episode, if you haven't heard it, you can listen to episode 1. It's titled "For This Divorce I Prayed." I mentioned to you in that episode that once I knew that this marriage, this is over, oh yeah, I became calculated. I became a calculating bitch. I was like, well, if this is how he wants it, the gloves are off now. I will do what works best for me, you know. Now I know that I live at home with my enemies. But think about this for a second, how this made me feel, like what I was going through just hearing them talk like this. If I'd heard his mother talking to somebody else about me, right, I would have still been hurt and shocked, because she never showed that side of her to me. But to hear the person I was married to plotting against me, like, you are, he was straight up plotting to kick me out of the house that we shared and I contributed to, I'm like, wow, these are people that I was feeding, I was spending my money on, I'm smiling with, I'm living with. Like, is this puts a whole different meaning to living with the end. I was literally living with the enemy and did not know it. The whole time that I was praying against my enemies, nobody could have ever convinced me that the enemies I was praying against were within. There's an old African proverb that says that if there are no enemies within, the enemies outside can't get in. I had enemies within. If at that point that an enemy outside wanted to, like, just end me, oh, I would have had two, he or she would have had two allies right there in my house, under my nose, eating my food, smiling in my face, one of the times they were saying these things, actually the day they were plotting to kick me out of the house, I came into the kitchen. They were still talking. They, you know, I was recording the conversation, and his mother says, "Oh, can you please help me to fix my button, you know, her button of her shirt?" This while they are discussing me. So you can imagine the level of deceit. These are people, they could kill you. Let me read to you the first 8 verses of Psalm 35, okay? It's 28 verses long, but I'm only going to read the first 8. And this is a Psalm of David, and I'm reading the NLT version. O Lord, oppose those who oppose me. Fight those who fight against me. Put on your armor and take up your shield. Prepare for battle and come to my aid. Lift up your spear and javelin against those who pursue me. Let me hear you say, I will give you victory. Bring shame and disgrace on those trying to kill me. Turn them back and humiliate those who want to harm me. Blow them away like chaff in the wind, a wind sent by the angel of the Lord. Make their path dark and slippery, with the angel of the Lord pursuing them. I did them no wrong, but they laid a trap for me. I did them no wrong, but they dug a pit to catch me. So let sudden ruin come upon them. Let them be caught in the trap they set for me. Let them be destroyed in the pit they dug for me. Did you guys feel that? Because I felt it. This was part of my best part of the psalm. Every time I read it, I felt that part deep within me, especially after I knew what they were doing, after I knew they were actually plotting. I felt that. So now, like I said, they were planning to throw me out. So how did this end? Well, I'll tell you how it ended. When we separated in December of 2017, who got kicked out of the house? They both got kicked out. His mother traveled and was not allowed to return. He could not come within certain feet around me. I don't remember the exact number, but he couldn't come to the house. He wasn't even allowed to come on the premises. Like, he wasn't even allowed on the parking lot of the apartment. And he was mandated to keep paying the rent. So after plotting to kick me out, they both got kicked out, and he had to pay and could not come. He would sneak in, not into the apartment, but he would sneak downstairs to check the mail and take his mail. I guess he thought I didn't know. So, of course, I got the locks changed. I'm like, okay, come and check it. Come and check your mail. Let me see. Because Listen, I thank God for American laws. Because I had that protective order against him, he was not allowed to make any changes. He could not dispute anything I said. I told the apartment people, look at it here. I have a protective order, a final protective order signed by a judge. I need to be safe. You need to change my mailbox and change the lock. They changed the lock of the apartment too. And what happened after that, in between then and now? Well, the boy lost his job. His car got repossessed. There's a whole lot of things. So you might say that it's all coincidence that all this bad luck happened to him after we separated and divorced. You might say that. I call it victory and I call it vindication. And I have in my journal written that if I ever come to the day, and I do come, by the way, frequently, where I'm beginning to be like, oh my God, why aren't you doing more? You know, like, basically, if I'm having a bad day, if I'm feeling like I need to hear God and I need God to do something and he's not doing it, I remind myself of what he saved me from. Because till today, I don't even know the enormity of what he saved me from. Like, I know that there was juju, but I don't know what they tried. I don't know what they attempted. I don't know everything. I just know that he got me out. And I know that he loves me. I know that he loves me. And I don't mean to preach on this episode, but that's how the thing is doing me. It's grabbing me on the inside. It's got me shook, okay? My fate, or not, lack of faith in the marriage was pretty much sealed, right? Okay, I knew. Okay, cool. These are the enemies. And one more thing. I know I said the part about recording will be creepy, but this part, listen to this. Listen. So The day we separated was the day his mother was traveling to Chicago, and I had asked her, where are you going? And she didn't want to tell me where she was going at first, and she finally told me. So I said, aren't you going to take the rest of your stuff? And she said, are you chasing me? I said, yes, I am. Yes, I am. I said, this is my house. When you leave today, you will not come back here. Because, of course, at this time, I know she's plotting. So I told her, take the rest of your things, because the only way you get back into this house is when I'm gone. But as long as I live here, you will not step those feet into this house. And the boy says to me, who are you talking to? My mother, Iyami. I said, yes, your mother. don't let me go down this road. But it was a whole argument and I wasn't having it. I told her I was livid. The nerve. Like, she was really going to just travel. He was just going to drop her off at the airport and not tell me. How do you leave? You live in my house. You don't think you need to tell me that you're leaving the state? So I said, oh no, this is enough. You need to go. Don't come back. You're not allowed to come back. Truly, she never came back. He saw in me that day a type of anger that he had never witnessed before. So nobody had to tell him not to bring that woman back. Where was he going? I even had the protective. Where we bring who where? I told them, if this woman comes back here, I will show you a different side of me. I don't even know what I was threatening to do. I just know that I was at the end. I was like, that's it. No more. You know the proverb? I like proverbs. The proverb that says, you know, even a goat that does not bite, if you push it to the wall, it will turn around and bite you. I was the goat. Like, I'm not one to get into squabbles. I really don't want to fight. I'm like, look, what can we do? Let's settle this because I don't have strength. I don't have time. I don't have power. Please, let's get this over with. That's me. So whenever I and the boy had a quarrel, I was always quick to settle. It wasn't because I didn't think I was right. I was right. I knew I was right. But I just did not have the strength to keep fighting. So my thing is, okay, let's get it over with. What is the thing you say I did that caused this fight? No problem. I'm very sorry. Over. Case closed. But today, or in this particular day, I was like, no, I'm not having it. It's done. I'm done. Let the thing that will happen, happen. I told him, today, our neighbors will hear our voices. They will know our story. So she left. But anyway, after I kicked her out of the house that day, he went to the airport. While they were gone, something said I should check her luggage. No, not even her luggage. Just check her closet. And I went into her room and I noticed she had two pieces of luggage and they were both padlocked. And I'm like, who padlocks luggage in the house? Like, I live here. This is my house and I don't lock anything up. So why would a guest in my home be locking up her luggage? What is inside? You know? So I said, let me find out. So I went to the laundry room and I picked up a hammer and I went back to her luggage and I broke the padlock open. And it was a smaller piece of luggage and I saw his documents in there, like his degree and his certificate of citizenship, things like that. I'm like, I don't care. I'm not going to be petty and rip them up. Frankly, I don't care. So I didn't touch them. Also in that luggage was an underwear, her underwear, which was dirty and worn. And why would anybody save that in the luggage? I don't know. I still think it's something spiritual. I still think it's something demonic. And you might think I'm going overboard by using the word demonic, but that's what I think. I still think it was something demonic, that underwear. I set it on fire. I set that underwear on fire. I ain't touch it with my bare hands, but I set it on fire. I had gloves on. So I said, you know, nobody cares about the documents. I certainly didn't. So I put the hammer back, left the luggage, went back. Then I was like, wait, what about the other luggage? And something said, go back. So I went back. I went to pick the hammer up again, went into her room, took the second luggage out, broke the padlock open, unzipped the luggage. And I, at the top, it was just a bunch of clothes. So I didn't think anything of it. But then once I moved a couple of them around my people, that was when I saw it. It was juju. It was a calabash with feathers on it. And I was freaking out. I had never seen juju with my eyes. I'd only seen it on television. I certainly didn't expect to find it in my house, in the luggage of the mother of the person I was married to. So of course, all these thoughts are going through my head. Like, I literally opened the door and said to the devil, please come in, make yourself very welcome in my home. What would you like to eat? Here's your bedroom. Please let me know if there's anything you need. I'm here for you. That's how I felt. But that shock of finding that juju, you know, I said, wow, this woman, so this is what has been going on. She brought juju into my home. Oh, she's probably using it to control her son. That's why he's being so weird. So that shock of finding the juju was nothing compared to the shock of when I told him about the juju. And I thought he was going to be so shocked. You know, he might faint, self, jump backwards at the very least and be like, ha, my mother, this is what she was doing. No, the boy said it was his. And that was when I felt like a damn fool. Because I'm like, I've been living with you in this house. We pray together. We go to church together. And you have juju. In the future, maybe about a month later, he apologized for the juju. Take that back. He did not apologize for the juju. He said he wanted his family back. He was sorry for everything he did. A blanket apology. Sorry for everything I did, which meant absolutely nothing to me. And I knew he was lying. You could, like, I mean, the moment you know things now about somebody and those scales fall off your eyes, you can't unknow what you know. And I wasn't looking at him the same way anyway. Every word he was saying was being scrutinized in my mind. I'm looking at his eyes and I see lies. There's no truth behind those eyes. There's no life there. It's just lies. And anyway, he admitted the juju was his. He said he had just gotten it back from Nigeria. And remember, I told you, a month after he came back, the marriage officially ended. So the moment he came into the house with that juju, we were fighting. Even though the marriage had issues, a lot of issues before this, but the moment he came home, literally the next day, the fight was on. We were arguing. We went for weeks without talking. And then eventually we came to this moment. I asked him what the juju was for. And he said that it was for his political protection and breakthrough. I don't know what the juju is for. That's what he says. What I know for sure is that his mother told him what native doctor to go to in Nigeria. And that native doctor told him that I was the reason for all his setbacks. And that's where he got the juju. So I don't know if the juju is really for what he said it was for. For all I know, the native doctor might have given him juju and said, here, take this and it will bring blah, blah, blah in your home. I don't know. What I knew was that darkness and light cannot be in the same house. I was the light and he was the darkness, and we were not going to coexist. That I knew. The final instance I want to share with you is when I actually filed for divorce. So I had this lawyer, an older white man. He was all right. He was nice. But at some point, I started getting this nudge to fire him. It was the weirdest thing. And I'll tell you why it was weird. First of all, to be completely honest, I was not 100% satisfied with what he was doing. But I hadn't gotten to a point of fire him, right? However, once again, it was that gentle nudge. I don't know if this is my imagination, but it almost felt like I could hear the voice in my head. Fire him, fire him, fire him. And I told my friends, I said, I don't know why I feel I should fire this lawyer. Yeah, he hasn't been 100% doing exactly what I wanted, but the urge, the pull to fire him was so strong. And it would come at times that I wasn't even thinking about my lawyer or the divorce or anything about this, but then it's like suddenly that thought would flood my mind, fire him. And there was this lawyer, I didn't know any other divorce attorneys. Now, there was this lawyer, young Igbo girl here in Maryland. Somebody had told me about it. And here's the interesting thing about that. The person who told me, I had called her one day and said, hey, do you know any divorce attorneys, preferably someone of African descent? And she's like, no, I don't know anyone to recommend you hire, but I know someone you shouldn't hire. That's how I found out about who this person who eventually became my attorney. And she said, don't hire her. She's very expensive. She wears Chanel shoes and Louis Vuitton. She doesn't smile. All she cares about is money. Like, no positive review. But while I was getting the nudge to fire the lawyer I had an equally strong nudge to call this one. And I'm like, why do I want to call her? I haven't heard one single review that was good about her. I only knew one person who knew her, and the person had nothing good to say. Oh, well, I take that. The person did say that she was a shock in court. She was a shock in court, but all she wants is money. She wears this and she does that. So I said to myself, well, let me see if I can at least afford her. I need a shock in court, considering what I was fighting for. I'm like, I need someone who understands what I'm fighting for. I need someone who understands that there was juju in my marriage. This is not a joke. Someone who understands that there was domestic violence, people will understand. But I felt like I needed somebody who would culturally understand the implications of juju in a household. Okay? So I eventually called her. She had free consultations, which I really appreciate, by the way, for the attorneys that do the free consultations. Thank you very much. It gets expensive when you start talking, consulting with several attorneys, trying to figure out who you want, who can take your case. So she had free consultation. It was to be a 30-minute phone call. I ended up talking to her for an hour and a half. I loved her. She knew what she was talking about. She had ideas. Once I said, look, this is what's going on. This is what I'm fighting for. She had ideas immediately of what we could do. And I was like, okay, she knows what she's talking about. The money. Ah, God, that money. Don't let me think about it. Yes, she's not cheap. She's not cheap. But she did what I asked her to do. She delivered. I prayed to hear the voice of God. And I didn't hear it how I thought I was supposed to hear it. You know, like when you read Bible stories and this person heard God say, that's what I pictured it will happen like in to me. And it wasn't. But in every one of these instances that I just told you, it wasn't my thoughts. It wasn't me who just conjured up these thoughts. It's that still small voice, that gentle nudge from an unseen force. It's friendly. It's a friendly pull from a familiar place, a safe place. It's like the thing is nudging you, do this or don't do that. And you can't say where that thought came from exactly, but you know it's there and you know you can trust it. You have to be silent through your own mouth and through your mind. You know how sometimes your mind doesn't shut up? Like when you lie down to sleep, for example, you want to sleep. Your body's like, I'm tired, I want to sleep. But your mind is talking, thinking about this. Oh, I didn't do this. Oh, whatever. Yeah. So in order to hear your voice, in order to hear, not your voice, in order to listen to your intuition, to be able to listen to your intuition, you have to silence not just your lips, but your mouth. Your mind, I'm sorry. You have to silence your mind. You have to invite your intuition, whatever you want to call it, your intuition, your spirit, the Holy Spirit, your soul. You have to invite it in and you have to let go of your thoughts and ideas and let it speak. It'll tell you which way you should go. Because for me, one of the things I fought with sometimes was trying to understand this intuition, this voice of God I'm thinking I'm hearing, is it the voice of God or is it my voice? Is it me bringing to life what I want and wanting to pin it on God because it makes me feel better? And I searched my spirit as much as I could, as much as was humanly possible, and I knew this was not my thought. And the reason why I knew that is because of all the other things that had happened, like when I started reading some 35, like when I decided to record their messages, their conversations, like when I decided to open her luggage. Those were not, at no time did the thought occur to me that one day you should go and open this woman's luggage and search it. It never occurred to me. But that day, the thought was strong. And even though I was going there, walking over to that bedroom with the hammer, I didn't think that I was going to actually find something. You know, in fact, honestly, what I thought I might find was, oh, maybe he's hiding money, right? Maybe he has stashed money away. He's saying he's broke, but he's really stashed it in his mother's luggage. That's what I thought I would find, not a worn underwear and certainly not juju. At the end of the day, to say that I'm grateful for my intuition, which I believe strongly, completely, is the voice of God. To say that I'm grateful for it will be an understatement. Because it saved my life. Just think about it. What if I never recorded their conversations? I would have never known they were talking about me. I would have never known I was living with the enemy. I would have never known what I was even remotely up against. What if I never searched those pieces of luggage? I would have never discovered the juju. I would have never known that such a thing existed in my house. What if I did not fire my first lawyer? What if I didn't hire this lawyer that was competent to give me what I wanted and needed? I can't help but wonder, where would I be today? The I Am African podcast is powered by Verastic. Thank you for letting me be in your ears today. If you have not yet, please subscribe, review, and share this podcast. Do you know any remarkable Africans who should be on the show? People who have compelling stories, or maybe you just have a show idea? Please send any show and guest suggestions to iamafrican@verastic.com. That's iamafrican@verastic.com. Follow I Am African Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And you can find me too at Verastic on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Once again, I am your host, Vera Ezimora. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you next week.